Studying different world religions, and last week what we focused on was the man of Joseph Smith as is understood by most Mormons and how they're taught about him. We are going to confront the history regarding Joseph Smith probably next week. But today what we're going to focus on, and again this is not a session where we are making fun or bashing other people. Remember, the enemy is not people, the enemy is Satan. And Satan is so good at what he does and getting people to believe that which is false. But what we're going to do this morning is just share some of the things that are part of Mormonism and the Mormon religion, as said from their own presidents and apostles and their own books and doctrines. Now, I do want to say this, though. Though this is not a time to poke fun or criticize, there are going to be some things that are said this morning that are going to upset you. And I know that because as I was studying and as I was researching, there were many times that I would come across something so blasphemous that I cried. Because it hurts to hear some of these things and that this is what people are being led to believe. And so I do want to say that. And if you're offended this morning, by what you read, allow that to root in your heart out of compassion towards those that desperately need the light of Jesus Christ. And I just want to say that. Now, as we begin, when we talk about authority, when we think about authority as Christians, we understand that our sole source of authority is found where? It's in the Scriptures because it's directly from Jesus Christ and his apostles that he delegated, okay? Now, when we look at the idea of Mormonism, of course, they have the quad, which is the Bible, the Book of Mormon, the Doctrines and Covenants, and the Pearl of Great Price. And yet, what you read in the Book of Mormon and these other books is not an accurate representation of Mormonism today. Now, this is what I mean. And this is what makes studying Mormonism very confusing. Because if you want to know what Christians believe, all you have to do is open up the book, hopefully, and read it, and you would come across a passage and understand they must believe this, because this is what it says. But in the case of Mormons, they today have what they call living oracles. And they believe that the apostleship was restored with the restoration of the church in America through the Latter-day Saints, and therefore there are always 12 apostles or living oracles and a president over them. The first president, the successor to Joseph Smith, was, anyone remember? They named a university after him. Brigham Young, there you go. These men are the final authority. Not the Book of Mormon, not the Doctrines and Covenants, not the Pearl of Great Price, but as they receive oracles from God, they can supersede that which has been delivered before, even by past presidents or even founders of the Mormon religion. And here's what I mean. When you look at Brigham Young himself opened up the Book of Mormon and opened up Doctrines and Covenants and then proceeded to say the following. He said, "When compared with the living oracles, those books are nothing to me. Those books do not convey the word of God direct to us now as they do the words of a prophet or a man bearing the holy priesthood in our day and generation. I would rather have the living oracles than all the writings in these books." And that was Brigham Young's opinion on the book that Joseph Smith worked so hard on translating and writing as delivered from the angel Moroni 10,000 miles and through all these different trials. And apparently, according to Brigham Young, that was all for naught, because all we need is the living oracles. They don't need the Book of Mormon. They don't need the Doctrines and Covenants, according to Brigham Young. President Heber Kimball said the following, and this is really important to understand. when we talk about the apostles and the presidents as being the final authority, if they were to say something that is contradictory to that which you see from a past president or something you would read perhaps even within the Book of Mormon, I'm going to show you a specific example in a little bit, you are not to question the authorities. Because it doesn't matter what you read in your book, what's from God is what comes out of the living oracle's mouth, and that's the end of the matter. You cannot debate it, you cannot discuss it, you cannot argue it. And so President Kimball said the following, "Learn to do as you're told, both old and young. Learn to do as you are told for the future. If you are told by your leader to do a thing, do it. It is none of your business whether it is right or wrong." Yes, go ahead. Happens all the time. And then it's kind of up to you to decide who to listen to. But it happens quite often. We're going to show some of those things. Here's another. This is part of the home teachers group in society that was taught in Mormon homes. This was read for you last week. But this was what was taught in Mormon homes and homeschooling programs is the following. "It should be remembered that Lucifer has a very cunning way of convincing unsuspecting souls that the general authorities of the church are likely to be wrong as they are right. He wins a great victory when he can get members of the church to speak against their leaders and to do their own thinking. What cunning! When our leaders speak, the thinking is done. When they propose a plan, it is God's plan. When they point the way, there is no other way which is safe. When they give direction, it should mark the end of controversy." And the teaching goes on to say that anyone who would so as dare to question any of the general authorities is guilty of damnation and will not inherit the celestial kingdom of God. And that is what was taught in Mormon homes for so long. It is an unconditional, absolute, without any question, blind acceptance of what these men say, regardless of what has been taught in the past, and regardless of what you might find today being shared and being brought up about the history of these men or the history of what was written in regards to these religions. Now, before I come here, I just want to share this. You know, a while ago, there was a lesson I was asked to give, and it was, why are young people leaving the church? And even within the church, sometimes questions are suppressed. And what will happen is someone will ask a question, a young person, because they have not been taught. They just don't know the answer. And it could be something that for you might seem so easy and blasphemous, but they might say, well, I don't understand why baptism would be necessary for salvation. I don't agree with that. And sometimes those kind of questions have been met with, how dare you question the authority of God? And therefore, they're kind of brushed aside and not dealt with. And brethren, I want us to understand, when we do that, what we are doing is we are saying, you must have blind faith and just accept what I tell you without discovering it for yourself. There needs to be a teaching process, and these questions are not questioning authority, but they are questioning to understand authority. Does that make any sense? It's not a challenge, it's a request. Now, we have a responsibility when questions are raised to answer those questions. And that whole mentality is completely suppressed in the Mormon church. You don't ask questions. And when we've had young Mormon elders come and study with us and they began to ask questions, they were relocated and they were no longer allowed to come and speak to us or see us. And several of them were sent back to Salt Lake City to do some time there. Yes, go ahead. Well, let's look at that. Brigham Young, and this is just, we're going to talk about some of these things in the next couple of weeks as we talk about how to reach out to a Mormon. Some of the things that Brigham Young taught were very, very peculiar and very interesting, of which some of them included that the only way you can be forgiven for certain sins is by bleeding yourself out to death and cutting yourself and offering a blood sacrifice to God. Brigham Young also taught the following. He said that God and Father is actually none other than Adam himself, and that Adam is actually God. He is Jehovah, he is the Son, he is the whole Godhead, and there's we'll talk about their changing theology of the Trinity in the next couple weeks. But even in two general conferences, and he introduced this doctrine at the lecture as the lecture at the veil in the endowment ceremony of the Mormon temple itself, their most holy and sacred place where you become begin this process to godhood, as we'll talk in just a few moments. But in 1976, this is what the president, who is considered an oracle of God, again, President Kimball, said the following. We warn you against the dissemination of doctrines which are not according to the scriptures, which are alleged to have been taught by some of the general authorities of past generations. Such, for instance, as the Adam God theory. We denounce this theory and hope everyone will be cautioned against this and other kinds of false doctrine. Now, we've got a problem, don't we? And I would certainly think so as a Mormon, but this is not a problem. Because what is taught is that Brigham Young and Joseph Smith and these other oracles were only prophets when acting as such. But the rest of the time, they were a mere man. And so sometimes the oracles that they gave were from God, but other times they were from Satan or from their own desires. And so that would probably leave us with a question, though. How do you know when what they're speaking is from God and is from themselves? Because Brigham Young himself stated, I have never yet preached a sermon and sent it out to the children of men that they may not call scripture. That's what he said, that my oracle's directly from God. You can count it as scripture, which included his Adam God theology, and yet 100 years later, it's denounced as false doctrine and to reject all of his teaching as such. Okay? So, what do we do when they contradict? Well, again, they're encouraged to just remember that these are not only prophets, but also just men. And that's how we're supposed to deal with this. But this is the other way you're supposed to deal with this. And if you'll remember, anytime you've had Mormon elders come and study with you, what's the one thing they ask you to do to know that the Book of Mormon is true? They say, pray about it. James 1:5, if you ask God for wisdom, as Joseph Smith originally began, then he will give it to you. And so you will have this feeling within your heart, and you will just know for certain that it's the truth. And that is the determination of truth to the Mormon, is this prayer and this feeling within your heart and within your soul. Yeah, Heather. Mm-hmm. So keep praying. 83 times. This is the standard for truth. Now, this is what's difficult, and I'm going to be giving you guys a link. Jack gave this to me, and you can find the link and print it off for yourself online, but this is a fantastic little booklet put together by a man named Jeremy Runnels, who wrote a letter to the authorities of the Mormon Church and asked and had a bunch of questions. And he wrote all these down. But what's interesting is he talks about this very point of, you know, the whole, you know, pray over it and you'll just know that it's true, or don't pray over it, you won't know it's true. And what he talks about is he says there's all these different denominations even within the Mormon Church. I didn't know that. But there's the Latter-day Saints, who say, I know that Joseph Smith was a true prophet. I know the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the one and only true church. And I know the Book of Mormon is true. And I know that Thomas S. Manson is the Lord's true prophet today, or Munson. But the fundamentalist Church of Christ of the Latter-day Saints say, I know that Joseph Smith was a true prophet. I know fundamentalist Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints is the only one and true church. I know the Book of Mormon is true, and I know that Warren Jeffs is the Lord's true prophet today, who, by the way, is serving life and 20 years in prison at the current time. There's the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. And they say the same thing, except they also say, I know that W. Wallace Smith is the Lord's true prophet. The Latter-day Church of Jesus Christ, the LDCJC, believe the same. They say, I know the Book of Mormon and the Book of Jaranek are true. And I know that Matthew P. Gill is the Lord's true prophet, seer, revelator, and translator today. And so his question is, same method. Read, ponder, and pray different testimonies. All four testimonies cannot simultaneously be true. So what do we do? And yet they all have the same method. I prayed, I know it's true, and so it's true. Because of the feeling that I have.
What's the link?
I'm going to give this to you guys. You can Google it. Just type in a letter to a CES director. But I'll put it down. You can go to www.cesletter.com. And you can print this off for yourself. But this is probably one of the best brief resources and overviews that you can have and give to those that you're studying with. It's only 83 pages long. And it's really, really short. It's a really good read. 83 pages, yeah. I'm watching you. There's a number. There's a pattern. That's not part of Mormon theology. As we talk about moving on to some doctrines and some certain things, Joseph Smith said the following. And of course, when we think of Christ, what is the greatest commandment that has been given to man? Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second is likened unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Joseph Smith said the following. The greatest responsibility in this world that God has laid upon us is to seek after the dead. And then President Joseph Smith, the Joseph Fielding Smith, much later than Joseph Smith, but he is one who has done a really good job of putting together a lot of Joseph Smith's teachings. This is his book. Said the following. The greatest commandment given to us and made obligatory is the temple work on our own behalf and behalf of the dead. That's the greatest commandment. That's the greatest work for the Mormon. And this is why. This is what this means. And we're going to talk about this in just a moment, but the whole point, really, behind holy living and righteous living as a Mormon is to become a God and to become your own God. And to do that, you have to go through the ceremonial rituals with your wife as a holy and righteous, worthy Mormon in the temple. And there's a whole process behind it. And there's all sorts of other stipulations we won't get into right now. But that's part of why, you notice, who owns like Ancestry.com and all these genealogical sites? It's the Mormons. And that's because to them, this is a salvation issue. And they have to go back and make sure that people in their family line are part of this process and are these spirit creatures that will enter into this paradise if they accept the ceremonies done for them as the dead in the temple and as people are baptized for the dead on their behalf. And therefore, you go through this process to ensure that your whole line and you will eventually be able to attain godhood. That is the greatest commandment. This is what I was just referring to. The latter, proxy for the dead, allegedly enable those who have been waiting in spirit prison for the millennium to become temple Mormons. And if the departed spirits choose to accept the proxy rituals, they are then allowed to go to a place called paradise, the home of all worthy Mormons who have died. And so there's a whole process behind this, but genealogies is the most important mission of the Mormons because it has everything to do with being able to attain godhood in the future. You got a question or hand raised?
They get this from a misunderstanding of 1 Corinthians 15:29.
Mm-hmm. Oh, baptism for the dead.
Paul talks about, are they baptized for the dead? And that is why these, if you ever want to look up your ancestors, that's why these are so extensive, because to the Mormons, this is how to save their family. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what's interesting. We talk about living oracles giving commands and doctrines that are differentiating from that which has already been written by oracles before. In Mormonism, there's no hell. There's no such thing as hell. John Widstow, who was an apostle, said the meanest sinner will find some place in the heavenly realm. In the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there is no hell. And all will find a measure of salvation. The gospel of Jesus Christ has no hell. And to the Mormon, there's actually three tiers of heaven. And you can actually work your way up from one tier to another, depending on your righteousness and your worthiness. But you don't want to be in any of the other tiers aside from the greatest one. That's what everyone wants to be in. Joseph Smith actually quoted saying, wrote this down in the Expositor, hell is by no means the place that this world of fools suppose it to be, but on the contrary, it's actually quite an agreeable place. And what's interesting is Joseph Smith's view of the throne of God is encapsulated with fire and burning and damnation and many of the things that he wrote, and he almost flips the idea of hell and heaven. Which is very similar to some of the writings and some of the books, we will talk about this next time, that Joseph Smith loved to read and got a lot of his ideas from. This is what's interesting. We just read what the apostle said. We just read what Joseph Smith himself said. And yet this is what Joseph Smith wrote in the book of 2 Nephi, chapter 28, beginning in verse 21. Regarding Satan, others he will pacify and lull them away into carnal security, that they will say, all is well in Zion, yea, Zion prospereth, all is well, and thus the devil cheateth their souls and leadeth them away carefully down to hell. And behold, others he flattereth away and telleth them that there is no hell. And he saith unto them, I am no devil, and there is none, and thus he whispereth in their ears until he grasps them with his awful chains, from whence there is no deliverance. Interesting. Because the book of Nephi says for certain there is hell, and those who believe there is no such thing are greatly deceived by Satan, and yet Joseph Smith himself says that hell's actually not so bad, and a later apostle says, oh, there's just no such thing as hell. Differentiating doctrines, what do we do? This is where we start getting into some difficult things to listen to, some difficult things to read. Yeah, Mick.
Question.
Answer.
Who in the Mormon hierarchy has the authority to move a person from one tier to the next?
I do not know the answer to that, and I believe the answer would be what we're going to read later, is that is Joseph Smith himself has the keys to the spirit realm and is in control of spirits after they die, from what I understand in my reading. And we'll look at a couple of quotations that I get that thought from, but I don't know for certain to answer that question. This is where we get into some tough stuff. Mormons teach that God is actually a man who himself became God, and he's just like you and I, and was a sinner who learned by being righteous and being holy how to attain truth eternally, and then become his own God. Joseph Smith says the following, God himself was once as we are now, and is an exalted man, and sits enthroned in yonder heavens. This is the great secret. He goes on, Milton Hunter goes on to say the following, Mormon prophets have continuously taught the sublime truth that God, the Eternal Father, was once a mortal man, who passed through a school of earth life similar to that through which we are now passing. He became God, an exalted being, through obedience to the same eternal gospel truths that we are given opportunity today to obey. In other words, we're here on this proving ground on earth to see if we're worthy to become gods, and that's how God himself became God, because he went through the same process on another earth-like planet and another celestial time, and that's why he is now God. Well, that's going to throw some really funny wrenches there, because what about the idea of God being the creator? Okay? Well, they deny that God is a creator of any sorts. And let's look at that. First of all, before even going into that, we are apparently equal with God. And this is where I began to really have a hard time. And still do. Joseph Smith said, "The mind or intelligence which man possesses is co-equal with God himself. And I know that my testimony is true. And I'm dwelling on the immortality of the spirit man. Is it logical to say that the intelligence of spirits is immortal, and yet that it had a beginning? The intelligence of spirits had no beginning, neither will it have an end. That is good logic. That which has a beginning may have an end. There never was a time where there were not spirits, for they are co-equal and co-eternal with our Father in heaven. And I might with boldness proclaim from the housetops that God never had the power to create the spirit of man at all. But God himself could not create himself. Intelligence is eternal and exists upon a self-existent principle. It is a spirit from age to age, and there is no creation about it. All the minds and spirits that God ever sent into the world were susceptible to enlargement." In other words, you can become just like God. God is no one special. In fact, God was just like you, and you're probably going to become just like God and greater than God. You're equal with God, is what the Mormons believe. When Jesus was born into this world, his previous knowledge was taken from him. This is their concept, that spirits are eternal, but because they're housed in this lesser tabernacle of these bodies, it can't handle the pressure, and so we forget everything from our life before as spirits. And this is what the Apostle Orson Pratt said. He says, "When Jesus was born, his previous knowledge was taken from him. This was occasioned by his spiritual body being compressed into a smaller volume than it originally occupied. When this spirit was compressed so as to be wholly enclosed in an infant tabernacle, it had the tendency to suspend memory. And so it is with man. When he enters into a body of flesh, his spirit is so compressed and contracted in infancy that he forgets his former existence. But according to the Mormon, we've always existed, just like God, and we had these grand ordeals before, and yet we can't remember anything because we've been suppressed and placed into this body." Okay? That being said, to the Mormon, when we go to Genesis chapter 3, we look at the most sad picture known to man, that God creates a perfect world for man and embraces them with love. And we've been going through at Madrona Hills, the book of Genesis, and yet you get to the most sad occasion in Genesis chapter 3, and what happens in Genesis chapter 3? The fall, sin, where man decides to reject God. Well, to the Mormon, the fall is the greatest thing that ever happened for man. And they celebrate it, even in the temple. Adam fell, but he fell in the right direction. Toward the goal, he fell upward, is what Sterling Still says. And he was an assistant to the Council of the 12 Apostles. Brigham Young himself said, "The devil told the truth. I do not blame Mother Eve, and I would not have had her miss eating the forbidden fruit for anything in the world. They must pass through the same ordeals as the gods, that they must know good and evil." President Joseph Fielding Smith himself said, "The fall of man came as a blessing in disguise. I never speak of the part Eve took in the fall as a sin, nor do I accuse Adam of sin. We can hardly look upon anything resulting in such benefits as being a sin." And this is what they mean. The Mormon believes that Jesus and Lucifer are actually brothers. and that Jehovah proposed a contest to see who would be the redeemer of man. And Lucifer lost, Jesus won. So in order to get back at his father, he came down and destroyed that which God had arranged to enable man to become gods like Jehovah and like Lucifer himself. And because of this, even in the temple, when they're going through certain ceremonial processes, on the outside of their special garments, they wear fig leaves to honor that which resulted from the fall. And Lucifer's telling them to eat of the fruit because thereafter they had knowledge of good and evil, is what they teach. And therefore, they then, remember what they did? They covered themselves with fig leaves. That's to honor Lucifer for his help in the movement of man. Yeah. This is not a sin because it worked out in our benefit to become gods ourselves. This is bigger than God, is what they would say. This has to do with us and our godhood to come. This is what they say. Dr. Harold Goodman was a BYU professor, and he was the president of the Mormon Mission in England, and this is what he said. As one of our great prophets and presidents of the church has indicated, as man is, God once was, and as God is, man may become. So you can see why the temple is so important to the LDS man, because if he is worthy to go into the temple and there receive the sacred ordinances and covenants and keep them, he can eventually grow into becoming a god himself. This is what these young men coming to your door are being taught and are being encouraged to pursue in their faith and in their life. And this comes above everything else. If your wife is in the way, you divorce your wife to pursue godhood. You leave your children to pursue godhood if she becomes an unbeliever. Because you cannot become a god without a faithful wife. It's all about this. President Spencer Kimball again wrote the following: in each of us is the potential to become a god, pure, holy, true, influential, powerful, independent of earthly forces. We were in the beginning with God. And that just makes me angry. I'm sorry. Because the only one that was in the beginning with God was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Not us. Before Abraham was, we were not. And yet he says, man can transform himself, and he has in him the seeds of godhood that can grow. And he can lift himself up by his very bootstraps. And yet this theology would be changed, because then it was adapted, regardless of what Joseph Smith taught, and regardless of what others taught, you have to be married to become a god. And so, later on, it was decided with our intellect and with our discipline, we can continually grow and develop and become a god if we have received in the house of the Lord the sacred ordinances as man and wife. This achieving godhood has to be done by companions, and it is not an individual pursuit. That's a latter development. But it's one that is now essential and has seen huge changes with how marriages work and operate in the Mormon church. There is also unconditional acceptance of Joseph Smith if we are going to enter the kingdom of heaven and become gods ourselves. Joseph Fielding Smith said the following as a living oracle from God: there is no salvation without accepting Joseph Smith. Kind of sounds like what the apostles, the true apostles, said in regards to Christ. There is no other name under heaven and earth by which we shall be saved. They say, you're right, there is no name under heaven and earth, and it's Joseph Smith, not Jesus Christ. If Joseph Smith was verily a prophet, and if he told the truth when he said that he stood in the presence of angels sent from the Lord and obtained the keys of authority and the commandment to organize the Church of Jesus Christ once again upon the earth, then this knowledge is of vital importance to the entire world. No man can reject that testimony without incurring the most dreadful consequences, for he cannot enter the kingdom of God. One last one. No man or woman in this dispensation will ever enter the celestial kingdom of God without the consent of Joseph Smith. From the day that the priesthood was taken from the earth to the winding up scene of all things, every man and woman must have the certificate of Joseph Smith as a passport to their entrance into the mansion above where God and Christ are, I with you and you with me. Brigham Young said, I cannot go there without his consent. Joseph Smith. He holds the keys to rule in the spirit world, and he rules there triumphantly, for he gained full power and glorious victory over the power of Satan while he was yet in the flesh. We didn't cover everything, and there's going to be a lot more that we're going to discuss, but this is some of the doctrine and theology of Mormonism. This is what's taught. This is what's pursued. We are going to discuss certain things like polygamy in the next couple weeks as we wrap this up. We are going to discuss things like the whole story of the lost 10 tribes of Israel and them being the root of the Native American people and all those types of things that they teach. We're going to talk about Mormon archaeology or the lack thereof. We're going to talk about a lot of these other things. And we're going to examine the man of Joseph Smith. And when we do this, it seems overwhelming because there is so much evidence to demonstrate the proven frauds of the translations of these books and Joseph Smith and his life and all these different things. It makes you wonder how anyone could believe any of these things. And since the rise of the internet, there's been a huge drove leaving the Mormon faith because they have access to a lot of these things. But I want to take this time just for a second to encourage us. Remember when Paul, even apostle of Jesus Christ himself, showed up in Berea? What did they do? They went to the source to see if these things were so. And may we never become a people that accepts blindly that which man tells us as though they are authority, because our only authority comes from Jesus Christ. And it doesn't matter what anyone else says or teaches, I am, and I pray, will always only teach and preach that which comes from him. And may we all dedicate ourselves to ensuring that what we hear, what we believe, what we practice, what we teach comes from God and not from man. And that's all I have to say on that. So, any other thoughts or comments before we're done? Yeah.
Just really short. How are these guys, those 12 men, elected? Are they from the United States, throughout the world?
I believe they're apostles until death, from what I understand. It's kind of like a Supreme Court system, sort of. But I believe the president is involved with appointing the next apostle, and the rest of the apostles have a hand in that as well. But I have actually no idea. I haven't researched that much into it. But there, when one goes, one replaces him, and so yeah. Yeah.
I was looking at the wives of Joseph Smith again.
You were right. By the way, he did. He had a lot more than I thought. Yeah, hold on, I got it right here. We're going to get there. Just one second. I'm going to put this down. Here we go. Warren Jeffs had 78 wives. Joseph Smith had 34. 14 was the youngest age of one of his wives. 11 of them were married to another man. One of them was a mother-daughter pair that he was married to. 8 of them were biological sister wives, and 7 of them were under the age of 18. And these were all Joseph Smith's wives. We'll talk about that in the next couple weeks, but you were correct. So.